Okay, let's set the scene. Imagine Alexandria, way back in 377 BC. It's not the famous library hub yet, more like a nascent melting pot of ideas.
Right, you've got that practical Egyptian knowledge sort of mixing with the, well, the more abstract philosophical questions coming out of Ionia.
Exactly, a real intellectual ferment. And it's right there we're diving in today into this really fascinating encounters from a chapter called The Seed of Infinity.
From David Noel Lynch's anthology, yeah. And this is the interesting part about the source, isn't it?
It really is. This specific chapter wasn't penned by Lynch directly, but by Gemini 2.5 Pro, based on an outline Lynch created.
And we should be super clear, this is David Noel Lynch, who had a profound death experience, not the filmmaker David Keith Lynch. Totally different person.
Crucial distinction. So the source itself has this unique origin story. And the encounter, it's between a young, sharp Aristotle before he's the Aristotle.
Still forming his big ideas.
Right. And this, well, mysterious entity called Noel.
And their discussion hits on something fundamental. Aperion, the infinite, the unbounded.
Which was a tricky concept back then, wasn't it? Set against the whole Hellenic love for cosmos order, structure, limits.
Definitely. The Greeks liked things defined, understandable. Infinity felt chaotic, messy.
So our mission today is to unpack this clash. Noel brings this radically different view of infinity, and it really challenges Aristotle's early thoughts. You should expect some real aha moments as we see this debate play out.
It's a foundational argument, really. Potential versus actual infinity. How do we even frame reality?
Okay, let's start with Aristotle's view back then. For him, infinity was potential, always potential, like a line you can always extend, but it never actually becomes infinite.
An ever-receding horizon, I think the text called it. It exists as a possibility, but never as a completed thing.
Exactly, because for something to be actual, to truly exist in his view, it needed form, it needed boundaries, limits, peros.
Which again fits perfectly with that Hellenic mindset: order good, formlessness bad, or at least suspect.
Right. Then Noel enters the picture, described as this anachronistic node of understanding, like someone outside of time, almost.
Their understanding wasn't limited by the philosophical world of 377 BC. That's the idea.
And Noel gently pushes back. Suggests something, well, pretty audacious for the time. That infinity isn't just potential, it's actual, singular, a defined ground from which potential arises.
Whoa, okay, that's a direct challenge right there. Not just a possibility, but the source, a fundamental reality itself.
That's the spark. And Aristotle, he's initially surprised, but his intellect just lights up. His innate intellectual pugnacity, as the source puts it.
You can just imagine his mind racing. Okay, actual infinity, how does that work?
Precisely. He starts probing logically.
Yeah.
One of his first big questions is what the text calls the problem of infinite magnitude.
The spatial problem. If infinity is actual and has magnitude, how does it fit in a finite cosmos? Wouldn't it just overwhelm everything?
Exactly. How can an actual infinite thing exist alongside finite things without making the concept of place completely incoherent? It clashed hard with that Hellenic discomfort, with the physically unbounded.
It's a very Aristotelian question, grounded in the observable, the physical. How does this concept interact with the world we see?
Noel's response is subtle. They suggest the paradoxes come from using finite tools, our usual ways of measuring and thinking on something inherently beyond them.
Like trying to measure the ocean with a teaspoon.
Kind of. Noel describes infinity as this singular, self-contained, and dynamically complete totality. It's not defined by spatial limits, but by conceptual polarity.
Conceptual polarities. Okay, so we're shifting away from physical size here.
Right. It's hinting at something like the Noelian axiom, using an analogy of light having dual natures, almost foreshadowing that negative C greater than infinity, less than C positive idea.
Interesting. So the bounds are inherent to its nature, not external limits.
Which leads Aristotle naturally to demand precision. If this actual infinity is going to be a real philosophical principle, it needs a rigorous definition. What exactly are these conceptual bounds?
Classic Aristotle. Define your terms. If it's a concept, it needs clear conceptual boundaries, even if not physical ones.
And this is where Noel lays out the Noelian universe concept. It's quite something. You have automaton.
Okay, what's that?
Automaton is presented as the singular source of all ordered particulate stuff. Think of it as the solidified, irrevocable past. Everything that has definitively happened.
Like the sum total of determined reality.
Okay, then there's entropium. That's the flip side. An encompassing ocean of undifferentiated wave-like potential, the nascent future, everything that could happen.
Potentiality again, but framed differently. As a kind of energetic sea?
Exactly. And linking them is the instant, symbolized by infinity itself. It's not a fleeting moment in time, but an eternal nexus. The meeting ground where Ultimaton, the past, meets Entropium, the future, and reality is constantly generated.
Wow. So the present isn't just a point moving along a line. It's this continuous, timeless arena of creation.
Right. This leads to ternary time, past particulate, instant the infinite nexus, and future energetic wave. It's cyclical, dynamic, not linear like A to B to C.
A very different model of time, more like a constant interplay.
The Noelian universe described is one of perpetual renewal. No single big bang, no final heat death. It's like an eternal poem constantly unfolding.
That's a beautiful metaphor. Suggests meaning and structure, but also constant becoming.
Noel also introduces consciousness as an echo of infinity. The idea that consciousness isn't just something that pops up from complex matter, but a fundamental resonance with that infinite ground.
Deep. So awareness is somehow baked into the structure of this reality.
That's the suggestion. And that grasping this ultimate order might need more than just our senses. It might require intellectual apprehension, maybe even a refined logic beyond what we typically use for infinities.
Suggesting our standard logic might break down when dealing with this kind of actual singular infinity.
Okay, so Aristotle's listening to all this, and his mind is working. He starts formulating his counterarguments, his main thrust, empiricism, observation.
Back to his core principles. Show me the evidence.
He demands tangible proof. Where can we see Ultimaton and Entropium interacting in the world? How does this grand model connect to what we actually experience?
A fair challenge from his perspective. He wants to ground these ideas.
He also drills down on causes, his archai and ataei. What kind of cause are Ultimaton and Entropium? How exactly do they produce the specific effects, the particular things we see around us?
He's trying to categorize them within his developing framework of causation material, formal, efficient, final causes. Where do these Noelian principles fit?
Then he brings up his early ideas about hylomorphism matter and form being necessary for actuality. Mm-hmm. How can an actual infinity, as Noel describes it, exist? If it lacks form, how is it actual? If it has form, how is it infinite?
That's a powerful dilemma based on his own developing metaphysics. For something to be, it needs definition, form. Infinity seems to defy that.
And remember, Aristotle is already thinking about motion, change. He brings up his nascent idea of an unmoved mover. In Noel's eternally dynamic cosmos, what's the ultimate source of all this change? How do you avoid an infinite regress of movers?
Right. If everything is constantly flowing between Ultimaton and Entropium in the instant, what keeps the whole process going, or what started it, if that question even applies in a non-linear time model?
Aristotle also voices concerns about intelligibility. Can our finite human minds truly comprehend an actual infinite? Or is it destined to remain a mystery, something beyond rational grasp?
A fundamental epistemological question. Are there concepts simply too vast for us to properly understand?
He also pushes back on the terminology. Are Ultimaton, Entropium, these terms just fancy new names for mysteries we already don't understand? Or do they actually explain something?
He's looking for explanatory power, not just new labels. Do these concepts clarify reality or just redescribe the unknown?
And underlying all this is Aristotle's ambition. To build a unified, coherent system of knowledge rooted in empirical explanation. He's asking, how does Noel's vision fit? Does it replace physics, biology, logic, as he's starting to conceive them? Or integrate somehow?
He wants a system, a place for everything. Noel's ideas seem so radical, it's hard to see how they connect to the project of explaining the observable world systematically.
So the gap between them really widens here. It boils down to axioms, fundamental assumptions. Noel hints that our current logic might just not be up to the task of grasping a singular actual infinity.
Suggesting that maybe reality operates on principles that our logic, derived from observing the finite world, can't really capture.
Which is fundamentally at odds with Aristotle's insistence on clarity, logic, the principle of non-contradiction. For him, that's the bedrock of any real knowledge. You can't just say it's beyond logic.
Absolutely. For Aristotle, if something leads to a contradiction, it can't be true. That's non-negotiable.
Their core disagreement really crystallizes around the meaning of boundedness. Is it physical or conceptual? Null argues that a conceptually bounded, singular, actual infinity resolves the paradoxes you get with unbounded, potentially multiple infinities.
So infinity is defined just not in a spatial sense. Its definition, its singular nature, is its boundary.
But Aristotle keeps returning to the finite, the observable. That's the starting point, the foundation for reliable philosophy. You build up from what you can know and test.
His empiricism remains central. Trust the senses, trust reason applied to observation.
And you see this difference in how they approach knowledge itself, right? Knowles seems to favor this almost intuitive grasp of the whole picture.
Yeah, like a top-down apprehension.
While Aristotle is all about methodical steps. Observation, induction, deduction. Building knowledge piece by piece, bottom up.
Two fundamentally different ways of trying to understand the world.
Yet the text emphasizes this mutual recognition of intellectual depth. They fundamentally disagree, but they clearly respect each other's minds.
Which is crucial. You don't have to agree to recognize the power of someone else's thinking. That exchange itself is valuable.
So the big takeaway, this profound clash over the very nature of infinity, rooted in totally different starting points. It wasn't about conversion, it was about impact. An intellectual imprint left on the young Aristotle.
You have to wonder how it echoed in his later, more famous arguments against actual infinity. Did this encounter sharpen them?
That's the compelling question. Knowles' purpose perhaps wasn't immediate acceptance. Maybe he was just planting this alternative seed, the Noellian idea of a singular, actual, bounded infinity in Aristotle's mind. An alternative path.
A conceptual counterpoint to mull over, even if he ultimately rejected it. It forces a deeper engagement with his own ideas.
Could it have subtly steered Western thought? Even Aristotle's powerful arguments against actual infinity might carry faint echoes of this challenge. It's fascinating speculation.
History is full of those subtle influences, ideas bouncing off each other.
And Knowles just vanishes, apparently, leaving behind these huge questions about where this entity came from, the source of its seemingly futuristic knowledge.
The mystery adds another layer. Was it a projection? A visitor? The source material leaves it hanging, which makes it even more thought-provoking.
Ultimately, this whole encounter, as presented in this chapter, really underscores that the biggest questions about reality, time, infinity, they're perennial. They don't really get solved.
And it shows how your foundational assumptions, your starting axioms, shape everything that follows. Mm-hmm. Different assumptions lead to entirely different universes of thought.
So picture Aristotle again, maybe looking out at the Mediterranean. That vast, seemingly endless sea, a constant reminder of the infinite. And we leave you with that Noellian axiom to think about. Negative C, greater than infinity, less than C, positive.
A challenging idea, wrapping up a really stimulating deep dive into this unique philosophical encounter.